Good afternoon. This is a public rulemaking hearing held in accordance with the State Administrative Procedure Act, specifically CRS 244103. The date is March 2nd, 2018. The time is 1 p.m. We're meeting in the Secretary of State's Aspen Conference Room on the third floor of the Office of the Secretary of State at 1700 Broadway, Denver, Colorado. I'm Deputy Secretary of State Suzanne Steyert. I'm convening this hearing in accordance with the rulemaking notice published in the Colorado Register on February 10th, 2018. Also seated at the table with me to my far left is Andrea Geiger, our Department Rulemaking Manager. To my immediate left is Melissa Polk, our Legal Unit Manager in the Elections Division. And to my far right is Dwight Shellman, our County Support Manager in the Elections and Division. And my immediate right is Judd Choate, our Director of the Elections Division. The purpose of this hearing is to receive comments from the public on proposed amendments to the Secretary of State's election rules. As stated in the notice, the purpose of the rulemaking is to consider rule revisions necessary to establish uniformity in the administration of current law, organize existing rules for clarity, eliminate obsolete provisions, simplify the language of existing rules, remove language that is duplicative of statute, and ensure consistency with department rulemaking standards. The Secretary of State released a preliminary draft of proposed rules with the notice of rulemaking on January 31st, 2018. Copies of the notice of rulemaking, draft statement of basis, and preliminary draft rules are available on the table in the back of the room. They're also available on the office website. This is a formal rulemaking hearing. This meeting is audio recorded and all comments become part of an official legal record. Hearing is also being broadcast over the internet. For anyone who wishes to testify, there are sign-up sheets at the table at the back of the room. You must sign up in order to testify. For the record, our office has received written comments on the proposed rules. All comments received will become part of the official record of this hearing and will be posted online. First person we have for testimony is Celeste Landry. Ms. Landry, if you want to come up and tell us who you represent, if anyone, and let us know what your comments are.
Thank you. My name is Celeste Landry, and I'm here on behalf of the League of Women Voters of Colorado. The League of Women Voters of the United States, LWVUS, is focused on making democracy work for all. We appreciate Colorado election administrators piloting post-election risk-limiting audits in the 2017 election. We have a 2009 LWVUS Election Audits Task Force report, and it notes best practices say to use a risk-limiting approach. So thank you. The League of Women Voters of Colorado does have some concerns about RLA as the audits are currently conducted in Colorado and would like to see the rules and practices updated to remedy the following auditing concerns that run counter to that report that I mentioned, the Election Audits Task Force report. Concern number one, lack of independent authority and regulation. For instance, we believe that the rules should be changed so that an independent authority or randomness rather than an election official chooses the target contest. In addition, the League might be a good independent group that could provide some members to watch the audit boards do their work, so we'd love to perhaps partner with you on that. Concern number two, gaps in audit transparency. Important information which wouldn't compromise voter privacy includes the discrepancy details. In other words, the number of one and two vote over and under understatements for each contest on each ballot card audited. The League of Women Voters of Colorado has a voting methods position that says election officials should conduct post-election analysis and there should be sufficient data transparency, for example, access to ballot records in anonymous form, for an independent analysis to be conducted by other interested groups. And our third concern is the reports, the audit reports only on a very limited number of contests. That audit task force report that I mentioned notes the post-election audit process should cover selected races and ballot measures in all elections, primary, general, and special elections, federal, state, county, and local. In a written comment that's posted on your website, we supplied more details on these 3 points and provided the URL for that task force report that I mentioned. To recap, our concerns center on, number one, the lack of an independent audit, number two, gaps in audit transparency, and number three, the limited number of contests subject to the audit. Thank you for your consideration of our comments.
Thank you. Anybody have any questions?
Hi, Celeste. My name is Dwight Shulman. I'm the county support manager. I had just a couple of questions. Gaps in audit transparency that you identified, I did read the League of Women Voters' written comments. Do I understand you correctly that you think that the amount of data, at a minimum, the Secretary of State's office or the county clerks and recorders or what have you should produce an amount of data that enables a member of the public to completely replicate the risk-limiting audit throughout the state?
The process, yes. They don't have to see the actual ballots, the physical ballots, but if we know if the CVR matches the observed result, then, or if there was an understatement or overstatement, then that's enough data for each ballot to be able to replicate the process, as I understand it.
Okay. Okay.
Did that answer your question?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there's, in my view, a complicated nuance in Colorado in that voted ballots are open records, and the open records law defines the word ballot in a way that includes the cast vote record, because it is a digital representation of each and every vote on each and every ballot.
But is it correct? That's what the audit's checking. Is the digital or the CVR what actually happened?
Right. No, I understand that. It's just there's some, in my view, difficulties under our current law with simply releasing the entire CVR, because those are ballots, and the open records law requires those to be redacted to remove any ballots that are traceable to a voter. So,
in very small elections, is that what you're referring to? Small contests?
It can happen in large elections where you have a, for example, in a precinct split in a general election, mm-hmm. where just one or two or five voters happen to vote that particular ballot style. Mm-hmm. That information under the Open Records Act would require to be redacted. The Secretary of State is not the redacting authority. It's actually the county clerk and recorder. Mm-hmm. So I'm just saying that there's, I understand the desire for, mm-hmm. you know, absolute transparency. There are some legal complexities that we are undoubtedly going to keep working through. So,
mm-hmm. May I say one more thing?
Sure.
So right now, there's one target contest, and that's what the audit results are reported on, just the one target contest per county. There are results on the others, but not an audit, not necessarily an audit done on the other contests. Not a risk-limiting audit to the same degree, same percentage, because you may not get enough ballots for that other contest
to satisfy
to meet
a
the
risk-limiting.
Limit. Yeah.
That's correct. Just bear in mind, 2017 was our first time out of the gate. We are looking into developing the software so that we can audit any number of races, whether they're statewide, shared between counties, or local. We're just not there yet. Mm-hmm. It was a big lift to get where we were in 2017.
Okay.
So, okay, right. Thanks.
Thank you. All right, next we have Bennett Rutledge.
Although nominally I'm here as the representative of the Libertarian Party affiliate of Arapahoe County, all I really have to say on their behalf is to please refrain from piling on regulation upon regulation, statute upon statute, to the point where it is no longer possible for a human being to be a law-abiding citizen.
And is there something in the rules, this round of rules, that you feel is infringing?
Well, these particular set of rules seem to be aimed towards government employees and government officials.
It has to do with the post-election audit.
But there are regulations that cover treasurers, like myself, for a variety of organizations. And so please be cautious about overloading people who, like myself, have a day job and are here on vacation time. And in particular, one of the things that's irked me over the past year or so is that there don't seem to be any orientation sessions anymore, except in this building.
For campaign finance or?
Campaign finance.
We actually do them all over the state. But the Denver ones,
announcements I've seen so far were for this building.
We've been in Durango. We've been out on the Western Slope. Mm. We've been all over the state in the past year. I mean, when we do them in Denver, we do them in this building, but we do travel extensively to do trainings.
Okay. So to bring me to the particular subject that applies to this, I'd like to draw attention to Rule 10.13.3, which discusses, among other things, write-in votes. It is clear that the technology is available these days to recognize and record any scribble made as a write-in vote. And taking a look at Article 2, Section 5 of the Colorado Constitution, which is a little bit cleaned up and modernized for today, but is still pretty much the same as what I passed out in this flyer. All elections shall be free and open, and no power, civil or military, shall at any time interfere to prevent the free exercise of the right of suffrage. So I would like to ask that you take advantage of this technology and require that write-in votes be available to every voter in every contest. That I understand that there's statute in the Colorado Revised Statutes that say that write-in votes that are not votes for people who have pre-registered are not to be tallied. But this, with the technology available, you can still recognize and record them and honor the fact that a citizen expressed this position. And eventually, you can work towards the day when you don't need 120 or 90 days advance notice that someone is going to be a write-in candidate, and simply accept an affirmation of willingness to serve within 24 hours before the votes begin to be counted. So, any questions?
I don't think I have any. No. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. That concludes the sign-up sheet. So at this time, our office will take under advisement possible amendments to the Secretary of State's election rules. The record will remain open through close of business Friday, March 9th. To allow the submission of additional comments.
Ouch. Oh,
did I not announce you had to sign up to testify? I thought I did.
Yeah. Can I sneak in here? I need to fill this out.
Pretty sure I announced that.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Thank you. Good afternoon. I'm Neil McBurnett. And I, first of all, really like to thank you all for working so hard with some of the countries and world's top experts on auditing and election security and in rolling out these audits. I'll single out Dwight Shellman sitting over there because very few people have any idea how hard he worked, and I just have an inkling of that. So. And really the whole office and clerks around the state have been tremendously supportive of getting us so far ahead of the rest of the country when it comes to being attuned to all kinds of risks of the outcomes being wrong by mistake, by attack, by cyber attack. And as we all know, those risks are only increasing and increasing in sophistication. I generally support the comments from the League of Women Voters. Really appreciate their commentary and engagement. They've actually studied this more extensively than most people I know. Verified Voting also had some very excellent comments that I want to endorse. Professor Philip Stark and his collaborators and Harvey Branscombe have also done a tremendous amount of work in reviewing the rules and coming up with very good observations on them. One of the things I want to start with is that in order to audit a statewide contest, you need a method to do multi-county audits, as Dwight has already noted. And Philip Stark and Kelly Otonobi and some collaborators, including myself, put in a paper yesterday that I think will be very helpful in actually allowing that to happen. And so I suggest that that be cited in the rule. And we will have a citation that you can use on the archive server, a well-known venue for putting such papers up, that I think will allow allow you to give input to software developers on how to do that. I also suspect that now or very soon, it will be useful, especially as we try to grapple with some of the legislative districts that cross county boundaries and other contests that can be inefficient with existing methods, that we consider Bayesian auditing methods. And there is a reference in the paper I just mentioned to a paper by Ron Rebest that I think is also on archive and should be cited and allowed so that you have the flexibility to work with software developers to incorporate that. If it allows you to do really meaningful and scientific audits, even if they are not as rigorously developed in the risk-limiting audit terminology and definitions as we might like at this point. A bunch of comments on the rules, and these are mostly come out of the materials that I've already cited, but the idea that you can trust scans for recount purposes simply because there was a contest in a county that satisfied a risk-limiting audit makes no sense at all. Mistakes happen with contests that are very contest specific, and auditing one contest would, you know, a different contest would give you no hint that there was a problem with it. Certainly somebody attacking an election is not going to wholesome attack everything. So you just can't infer trust in a contest if you haven't actually audited that contest. And I think that risk-limiting audits are a way to be much more efficient. You can think of them as a much more efficient recount. In a very tight race, you should probably still do a real recount. You know, a lot of people think that a rescan with the same equipment isn't going to give you much evidence, and I would much prefer that you use hand-to-paper risk-limiting audit methodologies to do that. And in big enough elections, certainly in statewide elections, we have plenty of resources. I don't think it would take much more than we've already done in 2017, or less than that for most contests. So I really want to encourage requiring risk limiting audits of all state level contests, because I think that is something that is not a scary prospect. And if there is actually a problem discovered during the audit, then we need to actually look into it, and that's a real problem. And so I also really respect the comments of those that say the choice of contest audit should not be up to an individual or done by people that are already involved in contests and in the elections. It should be specified in rule. And we're working really hard to come up with methods that will be efficient enough, even in smaller elections, to make that happen. You have a minimum now of 10 ballots. I really like the idea of there being a minimum. I don't think that actually adds anything, though, because 10 ballots, there's hardly any contest you could imagine auditing that wouldn't already require 10 ballots. So I'd much rather see and it only takes a minute or two per ballot overall, as I think our experience shows, incremental to do an audit of a contest. So if you did 30 or 40 ballots, after all of the rest of the effort that you all have put in, and again, I respect how hard you all work, spending another hour on auditing seems like a way to really raise the profile of how good we feel about the way that we count ballots in Colorado and avoid the awful consequences of a bad result. So I don't think that would be much to ask for significantly more than 10 ballots. I certainly agree with the need to be public about the results of the audits. We were very strong in supporting the regime of making all contests subject to audit, gathering data about all contests. But we really have, so far, very little to go on in terms of the public being able to verify the audits. And I'll separate this into two pieces. One of them is clearly the cast vote record thing, and I appreciate the concerns that you have and the things that make that difficult in Colorado for a bunch of complicated reasons. But before we get to the question of CVRs, just releasing the basic data that the software makes available would allow us to very, hopefully in real time, but really as quickly as possible, find out what evidence we have gathered on all of the contests and how much confidence we can actually have in them. At the moment, the data that's published it doesn't say what kind of discrepancy, it doesn't say what contests they're in. And so we're really not yet giving any evidence to the public or really to the election officials about how the audits worked for anything but a single contest. And even that one contest, as the League has pointed out and others, we don't give enough data to replicate it to make sure the software doesn't have problems. The last thing we want to do is say we're worried about software and we need software independence, but now we're going to trust a piece of software that is going to do the audit for us. We need to, as citizens, as candidates, especially as losing candidates, we need to see the data that gives us the evidence that assures us that there wasn't a silly mistake and the Russians didn't care about this, or the Koreans, or there are all kinds of people, even in a small contest, that have a stake in an outcome in a big bond election. And we've finally gotten to the point in Colorado where we can do that right. Let's go ahead and make all that data public. And I know there are challenges in doing that, and I appreciate you working on that. I think I've already mentioned the recounts. There are a bunch of things that weaken recounts that do not make sense that are detailed in what I've alluded to before and the references I've talked about. There's a great opportunity. I think one of our lessons that we, again, and I helped develop the software, so I know that that we were all working really, really hard to try to get as far as we could. But how do we deal with discrepancies? When we see a discrepancy, we have some evidence that in some cases it really was just an entry error on the part of the people entering the audit data, and so it wasn't a problem with the original election.
And is that a specific rule in here?
Excuse me?
Are you commenting on a specific rule in here?
I am suggesting that we should have a rule which makes it easier to investigate discrepancies. And
okay. I'm not sure that's part of this proposed draft. If you could stick to the rules that we have.
Okay. And with respect to the, I didn't finish kind of the anonymity piece, the cast vote records. We've had a number of discussions and have a number of good ideas on how to have software that could automatically redact cast vote records as they just come out of the Dominion system in such a way that there would not be the anonymity issues that would aggregate certain CVRs together or do separate them out by column so that we can at least get published data for some of the contests. There are a number of best practices for doing that. And I think the rule should require that the cast vote records be redacted for anonymity before they are uploaded to the tool so that at the appropriate time, and a hash be generated at that point, so that at the appropriate time when it's, as soon as it is possible to actually release the entire cast vote record, people can see that it matches the, certainly for the contests that are being audited or ideally for all contests, so that it can be matched to the hashed values. I'm afraid that in most counties that's not the case for the recent election, and so we need to do that before we roll the dice so that observers and the public know that the cast vote records didn't change after the rolling of the dice, because that really just invalidates the whole purpose of doing a random selection. And that is pretty good. The standardization of names and labels, I'm not sure if you're going to ask me if, is that not in the rules you're doing here?
I'll just respond to that. We are, for the Dominion system, I don't want to do this by, my recommendation to the secretary will be not to do this by rule, do it as a condition of use of using the voting system. I think we get to the same place.
Right.
We understand the need.
Right, but your software, I don't think you maybe appreciate how much extra effort it would be to have software that could handle you not doing
that. But
that's
not in our rules. So if we could just stick to the rules.
Yeah.
And if you could wrap up your comments.
Yeah, I'll just one more time say we should audit all contests at the state level to a risk-limiting level. I think that actually addresses a number of the issues that we've come up with. So thank you again very much, and I appreciate the opportunity to testify.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, and I believe that wraps up everyone who has signed up to testify. So at this time, our office will take under advisement possible amendments to the Secretary of State's election rules, and the record will remain open through the close of business Friday, March 9th, to allow the submission of additional written comments. That concludes today's hearing. The time is 1:30. Thank you.